All right, strap in, everybody. Today we are going deep on Aristotle.
Deep.
Specifically, Book Six of Metaphysics.
Nice.
We're going to try to figure out what he's talking about when he's talking about being the role of physics, and then this whole idea of first philosophy, which he
Yeah.
puts at the tippy top of his knowledge pyramid.
Yes.
You ready to do some serious thinking?
Absolutely, yeah. Book six is really where Aristotle
Okay.
starts to lay out like his own vision,
Yeah.
moves beyond just kind of summarizing what other people have
Right.
said about all these big questions.
So we know that Aristotle talks about different ways to understand being, but it's not just like existing, right? Like
Right.
he says that word has multiple layers.
Yeah.
How do we even begin with something that massive?
He kicks things off by distinguishing between what he calls accidental being, true being, and then this idea of potential versus actual being.
Okay.
And a really great example that he gives is the example of the snub nose.
Snub nose.
So the snubness isn't a thing
All
itself.
right.
It depends on the nose existing.
Okay.
So that's what he would call like accidental being.
So, like, if I spill coffee on my shirt
Right.
and it becomes coffee stained, that stain is accidental.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's not the shirt's essential nature.
Right.
But hold on, what is he getting at with true being then?
So true being for Aristotle is about a thing's core essence.
Yeah, okay.
What makes that thing that specific thing and not something else?
Got it.
It's fixed, unchanging. And then on top of that, you've got potential.
Okay.
Right? So an acorn has the potential to be an oak tree,
Right.
but that's different from actually being a tree.
Oh, so it's not just about static existence, it's about the process of becoming too.
Yeah.
That's deep.
Yeah. And this is where it gets even more interesting.
Okay.
Aristotle says those first two, accidental and true being,
Yeah.
they're not the main event when it comes to scientific study. He's more focused on the causes and principles that make something exist in the first place.
So he's not describing what is, he wants the why behind it all. This
Exactly.
is where he starts to categorize different areas of knowledge, right?
Yeah.
Practical, productive, and theoretical sciences, with physics being in that last category.
Yeah.
But why is physics theoretical?
Well, because it's about understanding the fundamental laws of nature,
Okay.
not about taking action or creating something new.
Gotcha.
Practical sciences, like ethics, guide our choices.
Right. Yep.
Productive sciences, like shipbuilding, make tangible things.
Okay.
Physics aims for pure understanding of how the world works.
So if I'm building a bridge, that's productive.
Right.
But if I'm figuring out the physics of how much weight that bridge can hold,
Exactly.
that's theoretical.
Yes. Physics is all about like the underlying principles of motion, change,
Yeah.
and forces that shape the natural world.
Makes sense. But where does math fit into this whole scheme? What kind of being does math deal with? It
Yeah.
seems to be in its own category.
That's a great question. So math for Aristotle is also theoretical,
Okay.
but it deals with a different kind of being. It focuses on things that are eternal and unchanging, like numbers and geometric shapes.
So a triangle is always a triangle,
Exactly.
whether it's drawn on paper or just exists as a concept in our
Yeah,
minds.
precisely.
Yeah.
But here's where it gets really, really interesting.
Okay.
Aristotle suggests that there might be something beyond even physics and math.
Okay.
He talks about a first philosophy that deals with something even more fundamental.
Hold on, a first philosophy. Is he talking about something
Yeah.
more basic than the eternal truths of math?
He is. He says this first philosophy deals with what he calls eternal and immovable substances.
Whoa.
It's like he's pointing to a level of reality that underlies everything else,
Okay.
a foundation on which all other knowledge rests.
So we've got physics studying the changing world,
Yeah.
math studying eternal but abstract concepts,
Right.
and then this first philosophy looking at the foundation of it all.
You got it. And
Oh.
he even links this first philosophy
Okay.
to the study of the divine, the ultimate source of being.
Okay, we've gone from snub noses to the divine in like 5 minutes.
I know, right?
My head is spinning. Why is this first philosophy
Yeah.
so important to Aristotle? What makes it the highest science?
Well, he says it's the highest because it deals with what he calls being qua being,
Being qua being.
which basically means understanding the very essence of existence itself.
Whoa.
It's not about studying
That's her.
specific things like rocks or stars,
Right.
but about grasping this concept of being on the most fundamental level.
So it's like zooming all the way out and asking, what does it mean to be at all?
Yes,
That's a pretty big question.
it is a massive question.
And in this quest to understand being qua being, is at the heart of his first philosophy,
yes,
which he sometimes calls theology. It's the pursuit of the ultimate, the eternal, the unchanging source of all that is.
That's it.
Okay, my brain is doing some serious heavy lifting here.
Yeah.
But how do we even study something as abstract as being qua being?
Right.
What are its principles?
Right.
What are its causes?
And that leads us to one of the most crucial,
okay,
and I think often misunderstood parts of Aristotle's work.
All right.
Which is his exploration of principles and causes. And trust me, this is where things get really fascinating.
Lay it on me. What is he talking about when he mentions these principles and causes?
So one of the most mind-bending things Aristotle argues,
okay,
is that there must be principles and causes that are generable and distributable without ever being in the course of being generated or destroyed.
Wait, hold on. How can something be generated and destroyed but never actually be in the process of being created or destroyed? That sounds paradoxical.
It is very paradoxical.
Okay.
But it gets at the heart of his idea that there are eternal, unchanging principles underlying this world of constant change and movement. Think of it like this. The principles themselves never change.
Right.
Even though the things that they govern come into being and pass away.
So there's this deeper level of reality where these unchanging principles exist.
Right.
And they're the foundation for everything we see changing around us.
Exactly.
That's a big idea to unpack.
It is.
But I'm ready for it.
Good. Because this leads us to one of the core tensions in Aristotle's metaphysics.
Okay.
Which is the relationship between necessity things that must be a certain way and contingency things that could have been otherwise.
Okay.
And that's a key part of Aristotle's thinking. And that's where we'll pick things up in part two.
All right. See you then.
Picking up where we left off with that tension between necessity and contingency, things that must be a certain way, and the things that, you know, could have been otherwise. That's really a key part of Aristotle's thinking here.
So how does he apply this to those principles he was talking about, the ones that are somehow generated and destroyed without actually going through the process?
He's trying to find like a starting point for everything that seems accidental or random. Remember, he said those types of being aren't the primary focus of scientific study.
Okay.
But he doesn't just dismiss them entirely.
So it's like he's acknowledging that chance and randomness exist.
Yeah.
But he's also looking for some kind of underlying order, some set of principles that makes sense of it all.
Exactly. And that leads us to another really crucial piece of his metaphysics.
Okay.
His exploration of truth and falsity.
Okay. So how does Aristotle approach truth? Does he think it's something objective out there in the world? Or is it more about how we perceive things?
This is fascinating. So Aristotle ties truth and falsity to our thinking, not to the things themselves.
Okay.
It's not that like a tree is inherently true.
Right. Or a rock is inherently false. Truth emerges when our thoughts match up with reality.
So it's about aligning our minds with the world as it is. But how do we even know if we've achieved that alignment? Isn't there always room for error or misinterpretation?
He talks about this idea of what he calls combination and separation.
Okay.
So when we think, we're constantly combining and separating concepts in our minds. So like if I say the sky is blue, I'm combining the concept of sky with the concept of blue.
Right.
If that combination reflects what's actually happening in the world, then my statement is true.
But what if I were to say the sky is green? My thought would be separating sky and blue and combining sky and green, even though that doesn't reflect reality.
Exactly.
So that statement would be false.
That statement would be false. Yes. Truth for Aristotle is about accurately reflecting the way things are connected there in the world. But how does this work with like simpler concepts? Like the idea of blue itself. Is that true or false?
This is a great question. So Aristotle says that basic concepts, what he calls like simple concepts, was they're neither true nor false.
Okay.
They just are.
Okay.
It's only when we start combining them into judgments like the sky is blue that the question of truth or falsity comes up.
So blue by itself is just blue.
Yeah.
It's only when we start making statements about blue that we can judge those statements as true or false. That's pretty subtle.
It is subtle. And it gets to a core distinction for Aristotle, which is the distinction between concepts and judgments.
Got it.
So concepts are the building blocks.
Right.
The raw materials of our thinking.
Right.
Judgments are what we build with those materials.
Okay.
And those judgments are what can be true or false.
I'm starting to see how this all fits together. He's carefully defining these different types of being, along with this view of truth and falsity,
right,
to clear the way for something bigger, right? And it's all building toward that idea of first philosophy, yeah, and understanding being qua being.
You're spot on. He's setting the stage to really delve into the core of his metaphysics.
Mm-hmm.
But before we get to that,
yeah,
there's one more piece I think we need to explore,
right,
which is his four causes.
Okay, remind me. What exactly are these causes he's talking about?
Yeah.
Because I have a feeling he's not using that word the way we typically do today.
You're right to be cautious. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When Aristotle talks about causes,
okay,
he doesn't just mean like the thing that,
right,
immediately makes something else happen.
Right.
He identifies four different types of causes.
Okay.
That contribute to a thing's existence and its characteristics.
Four causes. All right. I'm intrigued.
All right. So break it down for me.
First, we have the material cause.
Okay.
And this is the basic stuff something is made of. The wood of a table.
The bronze of a statue.
Right.
The DNA of a living organism.
So it's like the ingredients, the raw material.
Yes, exactly.
What's next?
Next is the formal cause.
Right.
The shape, structure, or design. This is what makes a table a table.
Right.
Not just a pile of wood or a statue.
Yeah,
a statue,
yeah, right.
And not just the lump of bronze.
So it's like the blueprint, the organizing principle that,
yeah,
gives something its specific form.
Precisely. Then we have the efficient cause.
Okay.
And this is what brings something into being.
Yeah.
The agent or force,
right,
that sets things in motion. Think of the carpenter who builds the table.
Okay.
The sculptor who shapes the statue.
Right.
The forces of nature that shade a mountain.
So the efficient cause is the maker, the doer,
yes,
the force that brings about change.
Right.
I'm seeing a pattern here. Each cause adds another layer of explanation.
You got it. And finally, we come to the final cause.
Okay.
And this one is perhaps the most intriguing. The final cause is the purpose or end for which something exists.
Okay.
The why behind its being.
Okay. I'm listening intently. Tell me more about this final cause.
Why was the table built?
Right.
To provide a surface for eating or working.
Okay.
Why was the statue sculpted? To commemorate a person or an event? Why does a seed sprout and grow?
Right.
To become a mature plant and reproduce?
Right.
Each of these things has a purpose, a goal, a telos.
Okay.
That guides its development and, okay, existence.
So it's not just about what something is made of or, yeah, how it came to be, but also about what it's for. That's a pretty radical idea.
It is a radical idea.
Yeah.
And for Aristotle, this final cause is essential,
okay,
to understanding anything fully.
Okay.
He believed that everything in nature,
yeah,
has a purpose, a direction it's striving towards.
But isn't this concept of final cause a bit problematic?
Yeah.
It seems to imply that there's some kind of inherent design or intentionality in the universe.
That's right. It's a concept that,
yeah,
has generated a lot of debate over the centuries.
Right.
But for Aristotle, it was really a cornerstone of his philosophy.
Cool.
He saw this final cause,
okay,
as a fundamental principle,
right,
that helps explain why things are the way they are,
okay,
and why they change the way they do.
This is making me rethink everything. It's like he's adding a whole new dimension,
right,
to our understanding of the world. A chair isn't just a random collection,
yes,
of wood and nails.
Right.
It exists for a reason, to fulfill a purpose.
Yeah.
And that purpose is part of what makes it a chair.
You got it. And this idea,
yeah,
that things have inherent purposes,
right,
has had a massive impact on Western thought,
right,
shaping everything from science to ethics to theology.
Wow. So we've covered a lot of ground here, different types of being, Aristotle's, yeah, unique view of truth and falsity, and now his four causes.
Yeah.
It feels like we're building up to something really big.
We are. All of these pieces are coming together,
okay,
to help us understand,
yeah,
Aristotle's concept of substance,
okay,
which he sees as the primary,
okay,
and most fundamental category of being.
Got it.
And that's where we'll dive in next time.
Okay.
When we wrap things up with part three.
Okay, so we're back for the final part of our deep dive into Aristotle's Metaphysics, Book 6.
Yes.
We've talked about different kinds of being, his view on truth, and those four causes.
Okay.
Now we're getting to what feels like the heart of it all, this idea of substance.
Yeah, it's like we've been circling Mount Everest, getting different views.
Oh, yeah.
Now we're about to drive for the summit.
Okay.
Substance for Aristotle is really the primary way things, okay, exist.
But we've talked about so many ways to think about being already. How is substance different from all that?
Think of it as the underlying what it is of a thing.
Okay.
Stripped of all the accidental qualities.
Okay.
It's not just the matter it's made of, but also its essential form.
So it's like the core identity of something.
Yeah.
Like a cat is still a cat, whether it's fluffy or hairless, asleep or chasing a mouse.
Exactly.
That catness is its substance.
Yeah. It includes both the material cause.
Okay.
What it's made of and the formal cause.
Right.
Its shape, structure, the essence that makes it that kind of thing.
I'm starting to see how this is different from just being in general.
Right.
It's not just about existing, but about what makes something the specific, unique thing it is.
Exactly. And Aristotle goes even further.
Okay.
He says substances are the most real things.
Okay.
The ones that exist like most fully and independently.
So they're like the VIPs of the universe.
You could say that. And what's really wild,
okay,
is that he sees substances as existing in a kind of hierarchy.
A hierarchy. Okay, now I'm really intrigued.
Yeah.
Where do we humans fit into this cosmic ranking system?
So individual things like you and me, that tree outside, even this podcast microphone.
Right.
We're all substances, but we're not at the top of the pyramid.
Okay, we're made of matter and form,
right,
and we change over time.
Right, we're born, we grow, we decay.
Exactly. So there must be something even more fundamental.
Okay.
Some kind of substance that sits above all these changing individual things.
A substance that's eternal and unchanging?
Mm-hmm.
That sounds almost divine.
And it's no coincidence that he connects this idea to his concept of the divine,
right,
that realm of pure being,
right,
that we touched on earlier.
So he's saying that beneath all the changing stuff we experience,
yeah,
there's this level of reality where things are pure eternal substance.
Right.
And this connects to his first philosophy. Right?
Exactly. Remember, first philosophy is all about understanding being, qua being, the very essence of existence itself.
Right.
And for Aristotle, that quest ultimately leads to this primary substance, the unchanging source of everything else.
Okay, so I have to ask, how do we know this primary substance even exists? Can we prove it scientifically? Mm. Well, that's a question that has been debated for centuries.
Right.
Aristotle argues for it based on logical necessity.
Okay.
He says there has to be a starting point, a first principle.
Okay.
Otherwise, it's just an infinite regress of causes with no ultimate explanation.
So it's like he's saying without this primary substance, the whole idea of being falls apart. There's no foundation.
Exactly. He sees this primary substance as the bedrock of reality.
Right.
The necessary condition for anything to exist at all.
This is some serious mind-bending stuff.
I know, right?
I feel like we've gone on a wild philosophical ride.
We have.
We've explored how Aristotle breaks down being.
Right.
How he links truth to our thinking.
Yes.
How he identifies those four causes that shape everything around us.
Yeah.
And finally, how it all culminates in this search for the primary substance, the ultimate source of all being.
It's pretty amazing.
And this is just one book of his metaphysics.
I know.
It's amazing to think about the depth and complexity of his thought and how these ideas are still relevant thousands of years later.
It really is. It's a testament to the power of asking those big questions.
Right.
And not being satisfied with easy answers.
Right.
Aristotle's work reminds us that the quest for knowledge is a journey.
Right.
And there's always more to discover.
Well, I hope this deep dive has left you with a lot to think about. Until next time, keep on searching.